you guys. Welcome back to Flickers of Fear, doing another Shudder original, because I think I mentioned on the last one that I'm kind of like getting behind like on some of these Shudder, because Shudder keeps adding new stuff every week, and some of them look really good, and I just haven't had time to go back and watch them, so I am really trying to watch some newer stuff that they've added to Shudder, and this is one of the ones that they've recently added. So this movie was actually directed by a guy named Duncan Birmingham, who actually, I looked up his IMDb page, and it said that when he was in high school, like, he got his start in as a writer in high school, writing for the Weekly World News, which, if you're not from the U.S., that's like that's like several steps below a tabloid. It's just kind of like, you know, it's kind of like chocoholic mom gives birth to sugar-coated baby type headlines, like lots of stuff about aliens and Bigfoot and stuff like that. So that's how he kind of got started, which I thought was like very funny. And he since went on to like write for other TV shows. I think he wrote for Marc Maron's TV show and made some short films and stuff like that. But this movie right here, this 2022 film, the Shudder original, is his feature film debut, and it's called Who Invited Them? So overall, I found this a very well-paced, very decent psychological thriller. It has kind of like a large dollop of black humor to it as well. And even though the plot is really nothing new, it kind of harkens back to some other films in the sort of home invasion kind of subgenre. I will say it's a pretty entertaining way to spend 80 minutes. Like, it's pretty brisk, it's pretty short, and even though it's not fantastic, it's like, I found it like, you know, pretty entertaining and definitely worth watching. So here's the story. There's Adam and Margot, who are played by Ryan Hansen and Melissa Tang. Now, both of them looked familiar, but then, like, when I looked at their Wikipedia pages, I was like, I don't know if I've seen anything that either of these two were in. Now, Ryan Hansen, I think, was in that Blumhouse Fantasy Island movie, so maybe I remember him from that. And I think he might have been in the Friday the 13th remake, so maybe I remember him from that. But Melissa Tang looked kind of familiar, too, and I haven't really seen anything that she was in, so I'm not really sure. But she just looked familiar to me, so I must have seen her in something else. So they play the main couple, Adam and Margot. So there are these people, and they've kind of lucked into this great deal on a pretty swanky house in the Hollywood Hills. Now, right from the start, the dynamic between these two is pretty evident. Like, Adam, particularly, is a really insecure, kind of obnoxious, try-hard type of guy. And he's desperately trying to impress not only the bigwigs at this company that he's working for and obviously, like, making a lot of money at, but also their old friends, like, from the old neighborhood. And I kind of feel like this is implied, but he feels like, oh, the old friends we used to hang out with, that lifestyle isn't good enough for us anymore. So we're like moving up in the world. And he really, really wants to be kind of like in the glitterati, I guess. And he's just like really, really obnoxious about like going about it. And like I said, it's like really desperate and try hard. So there's that. And then Margot, his wife, now we later discover that she gave up, I guess, something of a promising career as an indie musician. I think they make a reference of one, like her band, like opening for Beck or something like that. And she kind of gave all that up in order to marry Adam and have his child. Now, yeah, they have a son named Dylan who looks like he's about 5 or 6, I imagine. We'll get back to him in a little bit. But Margot is kind of the opposite. She's very, very uncomfortable with this very showy display of wealth. She kind of liked it where she was. Like, she liked their old friends and their old crowd and their old lifestyle. And she worries that the two of them are just, like, overextending themselves in order to kind of move in circles that she never really particularly wanted to be a part of in the first place. So not too long after they move in, seems like immediately after they move in and, like, have everything set up, Adam insists on having this big house warming party. Now, he invites mostly his work colleagues, but of course some of their old friends from the old neighborhood come there as well, but they seem like they kind of feel just as out of place as Margot does, like in this new environment, and a lot of them just kind of make excuses and leave early. So throughout the evening, Adam is being like cringingly pretentious. You know, he's got like this big vinyl collection, he's very hipster, and he's just like curating it. No one can touch it but him, and he has like like this whole plan. And he also kind of makes this big show of kind of plying everyone with these really precious like artisan cocktails, like, oh, I make the best old fashioned, and he has to do everything specific, and everyone just seems like they're rolling their eyes at him because he's being so fucking tryhard. Now, Margot tries to hide in the kitchen the whole time to avoid all of this awkwardness, and in general, it really does seem like nobody at the party, whether it's their old buddies or their new work contacts, appears to be having all of that good a time, and even some of the people that Adam wanted to come, like his boss and everything like that, like didn't even bother showing up. So the party ends at a pretty reasonable hour, because everyone's just kind of like, oh, look at the time, we have like other better things to do, you know what I mean? So there's that kind of thing. So before the end of the party, they have a friend named Teeny and her husband, and they offer to take Adam and Margot's son, Dylan, to have a sleepover at their place, like with their kids, because their kids are friends. Dylan has actually not been adjusting too well to the new house. He's been having like really bad nightmares and wetting the bed and stuff like that. And the nightmares are usually about, I mean, they only show it like once or twice, but the nightmares are about his parents getting murdered. So you just know this foreshadowing is going to come into play later on. And, you know, indeed it does. Now, significantly, while the party was still in full swing, like before everyone left, Adam noticed this very good-looking, very stylishly dressed couple that he didn't recognize. And they seemed like they knew him or they belonged there, because he was like giving some kind of like half-assed stupid speech. And they were over there going, oh, yay. You know what I mean? Like they knew who he was. And he kept looking like, who the fuck are those people? So there's that. So he was a little disconcerted by this. But he figures, oh, well, maybe Margot invited them or they tagged along with one of our other friends or something like that. Not really that big a deal. After everybody leaves, though, Adam asks Margot about them, and she doesn't know who the fuck they are either. So they're like, oh, well, that was weird. So they just kind of chalk the whole thing up to maybe it was just like a misunderstanding. So they kind of decide to put this whole lame shindig behind them and, you know, go to bed. But just then, this weird couple that they saw earlier pop out of a bathroom and scare the daylights out of them. Now, it's implied, they actually kind of imply, it's like, oh, we popped into the bathroom, like, to have sex, that's what they were implying, but then they lost track of time, and they're like, oh, did everybody leave, you know what I mean? So they apologize, obviously, but there's kind of like a wicked gleam in their eyes, I guess. And when Margot kind of gets justifiably mad and is like, who the hell are you and who invited you? They're like, well, you're going to think this is like really gauche of us, but we kind of invited ourselves. They said, we're Tom and Sasha. And they say they're the neighbors. They said, basically what happened was that we came out of our house and one of your guests was like blocking our driveway. And then we looked over here and we saw that there was a party going on. So we thought, oh, why the hell not? We're going to like pop over there and see like what the new neighbors are like. So they decided to do that. They said, oh, you know, we didn't mean to cause any trouble or cause any distress or anything. We were just curious. And, you know, we're sorry if we caused you any offense, yada, yada. So it seems at that point that the matter has been resolved. You know, everybody kind of makes apologies and makes up and everything. And Margot is like, okay, bye, you know, like kind of ready for them to leave. But Adam, her clawed husband, wanting to, I guess, like seem cool in front of these very obviously rich, self-assured, successful couple, asks them to stay for a nightcap over Margot's very oblique objections. She's just kind of like, no, what are you, you know what I mean? He's just kind of like, yeah, you should totally stay, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, fuck me. So yeah. So Tom and Sasha obviously take Adam up on this offer. And over the next few hours, the four kind of drink, you know, do some lines of coke, you know, various other things. And they kind of like get to know one another. And as time goes on, it becomes very clear that Tom and Sasha are manipulating the weaknesses of the other couple, kind of like turning them against one another for perhaps some nefarious purpose. Like, for example, Tom like targets Adam's sort of like upwardly mobile self-importance that he has, and he's like, oh, I know all of these wealthy CEOs, in case you want to start your own business, they'd be willing to invest, like come play golf with me. It's all this other kind of stuff. So he's like trying to get him all these connections because he knows that that's what he wants. Meanwhile, in the other room, Sasha is commiserating with Margot's frustration over having given up like all of her artistic ambitions to hitch herself to Adam's wagon. And he's just like very into material success and like showing off in front of other people and, you know, rubbing his success in their faces. And she's not really about that. So she's kind of like resentful that she had to give her shit up. So it's all like very insidious, like how this other couple kind of like targets them. And knows what their weaknesses are and what they can, like, you know, go after. We also learn partway through the movie that the reason Adam was able to buy this house for such a moderate price was because of a horrific murder-suicide that occurred there several years before, like 15 to 20 years before. And we further discover that Adam has kept this information from his wife, Margot, which kind of highlights another chink in the armor of their relationship that Tom and Sasha can exploit. Now, I'm going to say that I guess this, it's not really a spoiler because it's telegraphed pretty clearly that Tom and Sasha were involved in the former murder-suicide somehow. So I will say that while this movie is actually really entertaining and I had a good time with it, don't expect it to be like super surprising because the plot twists are pretty obvious like early on. You know that as soon as you find out about the murder at the house, you're like, oh, well, these two obviously have something to do with it. And indeed they do. Like I said, I don't even think that's a spoiler because it's pretty clear. So as the situation at Adam and Margot's house kind of shades into drunkenly boisterous dancing and being all coked up and everything into like some more sinister threesome foursome territory and then like, you know, them not leaving, like wanting to leave and stuff. While all that's going on, there's also kind of a small subplot involving their friend Teenie, who actually they left the party early on, like I said, and, you know, had their son, like Dylan, is staying with them. And she decides she's going to drive back to Adam and Margot's place to retrieve Dylan's Pookie. Dylan also has a Pookie, so do I. in case it's your first time here, I have a cat named Pookie. So, yeah, but the Pookie in the movie is a stuffed monkey that he can't sleep without, and he's just like, I need my Pookie, because he left it at home. So, but the kid at the other people's house, like, has woken up, and he said he had a nightmare that the, you know, that his parents had been chopped up, so I was like, oh, that's nice. Teenie is like, okay, well, I'll go back and get his Pookie, because otherwise he's not going to be able to go back to sleep again, and she can't really remember, like, where the house was, because like I said, they just moved here and, you know, so she gets kind of lost and there's a bunch of stuff going on with that. I actually really liked this little diversion, this kind of subplot here. I just wish that it had been fleshed out more and kind of tied in more conclusively with the main narrative. But having said that, the very odd ending of this, which I won't spoil, but I saw like a bunch of people being like, I didn't get the ending. But the ending, I don't know if I'd call it ambiguous, but it's open to interpretation. Like, there's a couple different theories that you could have about it. And because it ends that way, I have a theory about maybe what happened, like what really happened at the end, like to Adam and Margot. And if I'm right about it, then Teenie's side story actually makes a lot more sense, like ties in more closely, I guess. You know what I mean? So I don't want to like ding it too much for that, because if it was what they were going for, then I was like, okay, well, that makes more sense then. If you've seen it, you probably know what I'm talking about. But I think this is one of those movies that I will probably need to see it a second time because I want to kind of confirm my suspicions about the ending because I do have a particular theory about it and I kind of want to see if I'm correct or if I'm just like pulling stuff out of my butt. So all in all, like I said, this was a very fun, it was just like a completely decent watch. Like I said, it's not very long. I think it's only like 80 minutes. It's nothing to write home about really, but it's pretty solid. You know, it's just kind of a darkly comic home invasion style thriller. I don't even know if I'd call it a horror movie. It's more like a thriller. It isn't particularly gory or violent. There is kind of some blood, you know, when it gets a little murdery in the third act, like, you know, when everything kind of comes to a head. But other than that, it's not real, you know, it's not real violent. Most of the tension in the movie actually comes from the conversations and like the interactions between the two couples. But I actually didn't really mind that because I usually, like I said, like psychological thrillers. You know, all the acting is good and there's a lot going on beneath the surface of like some of the stuff that they say. Now, I will say the character of Adam in particular is an unlikable douchebag, but he's kind of supposed to be. That's kind of like a big component of the story. And as the movie goes on, you do actually start to feel a little bit more charitable toward him because he, you know, when he gets in these bad situations and then, you know, then you kind of start feeling bad for him. And he does actually seem to be capable of realizing when he's being an asshole and like correcting his behavior, which is more than can be said for some people. So if you like dinner party horror, I guess, where these sort of like fraught social interactions are the source of a lot of the suspense, then you'd probably enjoy this movie. It isn't as good as some other examples of kind of similar films, like The Invitation, the Karen Kusama movie from 2015, which is fucking brilliant. If you haven't seen it, I fucking love that movie. Or, you know, Michael Haneke's Funny Games, you know, which he made the original and the remake. Or the 2013 movie Cheap Thrills. It kind of reminded me of that as well, which is also excellent if you haven't seen that. But, I mean, it's not as good as those, but it's pretty dependably absorbing. Like, it's a good psychological thriller with, you know, some comedy to it and some effective performances, and it does actually have like a really good sense of like dread and tension like throughout the whole thing, because you're not entirely sure, like, you know, it kind of what's gonna happen, but it's like you're not sure like how it's gonna play out. So, you know, it is like really good at maintaining tension in that regard. So that will do it for this Flickers of Fear. I will see you guys again on the next one. Bye.